Kill radio, 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 kill This is the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour for June 30th, 2005. On Kill Radio, I'm Bennett, your faithless host. I've been trying to avoid it for a while, but it looks like even I have to take a look at that insurgency thing that's happening over there at that place that we tried to commandeer so we could get the oil and stuff. The place that isn't really a symbol. The place that if we went into, we were going to stop terrorism, but of course we have now made it even better for terrorists. Yes, there is a robust insurgency here in Iraq. Here in L.A. Here on Earth. Anyway, it's also the last news hour before the 4th of July, so we got to say happy birthday to this strange country, which is a much better country than you would think, looking at our leaders. Anyway, I'm Bennett. Settle back. Press your ears up to the speakers. It's time to get noble. It's time to get sober. It's time for the Impressionistic News on Kill Radio. This is the weekly news in review from the harpers.org website in association with killradio.org. I'm Bennett, your faithless host. This was posted June 28th, 2005 by Paul Ford and is for the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour for the last day of June 2005. Bombs went off in Baghdad and Kirkuk. Gunmen killed three people in a Baghdad barbershop, then blew it up. And suicide bombers killed 33 people in Mosul. 21,000 people gathered at Stonehenge to celebrate the summer solstice. The United Nations turned 60. 67 insurgents were killed in Afghanistan, although the United States said that that number may only be 56 and that they were having trouble keeping a tally of the dead. It was revealed that North Korea had approached the United States in 2002 offering to, quote-unquote, resolve the nuclear issue. If North Korea's sovereignty was acknowledged, the Bush administration rejected the offer. The United States was negotiating with Iraqi militants, including members of the Ansar el-Sunnah army, which is responsible for the attack on a U.S. dining hall last Christmas that killed 22 people. The reality, said Senator Chuck Hagel, Republican of Nebraska, is that we are losing in Iraq. Insurgencies, said Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, tend to go on 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 years. I think about Iraq, said President George W. Bush. Now, isn't this similar to our experience in Vietnam? Weren't we in Vietnam for, about 12 years before we realized that we were losing? The University of Connecticut was planning to offer a master's degree in Homeland Security, and the United States admitted to the United Nations that U.S. prisoners have been tortured in Iraq and Afghanistan and at Guantanamo Bay. Canada appointed an ambassador to Iraq, and judges in North Carolina were preparing to deliberate over whether the Koran can be used instead of the Bible to administer oaths. At the U.S. Justice Department, the $8,000 modesty curtains used to cover the bareness of the statues of Majesty of Justice and Spirit of Justice were removed, once again exposing an aluminum nipple. It was revealed that the Defense Department, in violation of the Federal Privacy Act, has been building a database of 30 million 16 to 25-year-olds. If you don't want conscription, said the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, you have to give the Department of Defense, the military services, an avenue to contact young people. The U.S. Navy sent a letter to Fola Coates, an 80-year-old Arkansas woman, asking her to join the Seabees. Italy sentenced 10 former Nazi SS officers to life in prison in absentia and ordered the arrest of 13 people linked to the CIA on charges of kidnapping a terror suspect. Swiss railways shut down due to a power failure, and gnawing rats shut down telephone, mobile, internet and electronic banking services for 100,000 New Zealanders. Zimbabwe bulldozed some children, and in Kenya, 48 people were killed and many others blinded by illegally made alcohol. A second case of mad cow disease was found in the United States. A monkey in a diaper attacked a fast food worker in Kentucky. A shark killed a 14-year-old girl in Florida. A 40-inch clam was discovered in Maine. And a two-headed kitten died in Oregon. In Spartanburg, South Carolina, a man was caught molesting a dog. He had his pants down, said the owner of the dog, and he was doing sexual activity with the dog like a man would do with a woman. The dog, Princess, later died of related injuries. British taxpayers were each paying the equivalent of $1.12 yearly to support the royal family. We believe, said the keeper of the privy purse, this represents a value for money monarchy. We're not looking to provide the cheapest monarchy. It was reported that Princess Diana once had an affair with John F. Kennedy Jr., but did not pursue the relationship further because they were astrologically incompatible. President Bush announced that he would visit Vietnam in 2006 to see what it means when we realize we're losing. The Supreme Court ruled that the government can take property under eminent domain for private development. Under the banner of economic development, said Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, all private property is now vulnerable to being taken and transferred to another private owner, so long as it might be upgraded. A car belonging to the police chief of Washington, D.C., was stolen. In India, a 14-year-old girl was granted an annulment of her 2-year marriage. And in Ethiopia, a 12-year-old girl was abducted and was about to be forced into marriage, but was rescued by lions, which ran her captors off and guarded her until police and relatives came to her rescue. The president and CEO of Formula One Racing, discussing racer Danica Patrick, said that women should be dressed in white, like all the other domestic appliances. Formula One, don't forget. In Mississippi, Edgar Ray Killen, an 80-year-old former Baptist preacher, was sentenced to 60 years in jail for organizing the killings of three civil rights workers in 1964. And the NAACP named former Verizon executive Bruce S. Gordon as president. Bill Clinton appeared at a Billy Graham rally in New York City. "God bless you, friend," said Clinton. This is his last evangelical crusade, and Billy Graham has now admitted that he was a lifelong Democrat, which I think is great when you consider how the Republicans have tried to shimmy up to him. American evangelist Benny Hinn, what an asshole, flew to Nigeria in a private jet to hold a three-day crusade, but only a fraction of the expected number of people came out each night. $4 million down the drain, he shouted from the pulpit. The Jordan River was filled with sewage, forcing pilgrims to bathe in special pools with treated water. An Irish man covered himself with 200,000 bees, still 150,000 bees short of the world record. Bangladeshi doctors removed a dead fetus from the abdomen of a teenage boy, probably his parasitic twin, actually, and a Florida man on an oxygen machine died when the electric company turned off the electricity to his son's home. Oh yes, and Tigger died, as did Piglet. So now you know, that's the weekly news and review. Can your heart stand it?
This has just got people up in arms. The Supreme Court ruled today that the government has the right to seize your land. They can take your land. And today, Native Americans said, what else is new? Oh, what a surprise! Welcome to the club.
All right. This past Sunday morning, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld managed to appear simultaneously on the Fox News program, the ABC News with George Stephanopoulos, and Meet the Press on NBC. So I, tired as can be of being up all night from doing the chill room, sat down. And I recorded some of the things that he said, just sort of randomly cutting between the things, you know? Don't you know? And so let's listen in to Rummy, and let's listen to some commentary first, because, after all, there is a very robust insurgency.
I have to agree with General Abizaid on that. I think when you're here, and whenever I come back, and I'm getting back this week especially, and the very next day seeing General Abizaid and General Casey and Secretary Rumsfeld on the Hill, and the questions they were getting, is very different than when you're there. The military feels like they're making solid progress over there. There are some incredible people doing amazing things over there. The problem is, we're not winning the war, we're not losing the war, and that's not good enough. If you're not winning, there is that disconnect. There's also a disconnect, I think, between the American people in general. They're not really connected to this. In some ways, you can say, oh, look, we have 138,000 soldiers and Marines on the ground. But in a way, it's only 138,000. People aren't connected to that anymore. People are forgetting about this.
They're not connected, George, but they are going sour.
They are. And to give the Secretary his due, he is the one who's told the country it would be a long, hard slog. Yeah, he is the one in a memo of his that made it into public, said it is an open question whether we're capturing, killing, or deterring the insurgents faster than they can replenish their ranks. And that is still the question. When I was down...
Well, actually, George, though, that was about the war on terror in general. It was not on Iraq. I think Iraq, Secretary Rumsfeld has been Orwellian, not truthful. He is... consistently said things were going well when they were not, consistently said we didn't need more troops when we did, then quietly increased the number of troops by 25,000, all the while saying we actually didn't need more troops. I think it's very difficult to make the case that Rumsfeld has been truthful about the war in Iraq.
Well, it's one thing to say you're not truthful. It's another thing to say you're mistaken. Mistakes get made in assessments. When I was down 7 months ago at Tampa at Central Command talking to General Abizaid, he said, foreign fighters are a trivial part of this. He said, we have captured and detained 10,000 people. About a few hundred are foreign fighters. Clearly, there are more than that. Our officials say we have killed 15,000 insurgents, and there are at least that many out there yet.
And General Casey, I mean, when he says 0.1% of the population, that's 26,000 people. You go back 19 months ago, and General Abizaid was saying there were 5,000, and as you said yourself, they've killed a whole lot of them. They are regenerating, and not anyone I talk to there says they are not regenerating, they are not regrowing. But you also have to make a distinction here. You've got the Zarqawis, and you've got the internal insurgency.
Well,
that's very different, and Secretary Russo didn't do that.
Abizaid says we're getting more foreign fighters, indisputable. And before, it wasn't the big problem there. Now we have a CIA report, Fareed, saying that Iraq has become the central training ground for all of these foreign fighters, and they could actually leave Iraq and go to Europe and attack there.
This is the real danger. I don't worry about a Vietnam-style defeat, if you will, in Iraq, because Rumsfeld is entirely right. This is not a national movement. There is no Ho Chi Minh. There is no ideology. At least 80, probably 90% of the country opposes it. But the insurgency is able to maintain an atmosphere of insecurity and allow these foreign fighters to keep coming in. So the danger for Iraq is that it turns into a kind of terrorist training camp.
Afghanistan
in the 1980s, bringing in these jihadis, now trained in urban guerrilla warfare, many of them with European passports. They may be Moroccans or Nigerians, but often they have some kind of European work papers, which means they're easy, they can travel very easily to the Western world, to the United States.
Iraq is considerable. They've elected a government. They have sovereignty over their nation. They're in the process of drafting a constitution. All people are participating. The elections will be held towards the end of the year. Economic progress is being made. And yet, Zarqawi and his people continue to kill Iraqis. They continue to kill coalition people. They continue to behead people. And the lethality is violence. And that's what's reported. So the American people are basically seeing almost all of the violence and the negatives, but very little of the positive side. So it's not surprising. Polls go up, they go down. If you try to chase them, I think it's a mistake. We have to be aware of that fact. But I feel that solid progress is being made.
As you well know, Mr. Secretary, a majority now say they don't think the war was worth the price. Mm-hmm. Chuck Hagel, a Republican, said this: things aren't getting better, they're getting worse. The White House is completely disconnected from reality. It's like they're just making it up as they go along. The reality is we are losing in Iraq.
That's just flat wrong. We are not losing in Iraq. And if you think of what General Casey and General Abizaid and General Myers said this week in congressional testimony, the allegation that it's some sort of a quagmire and progress isn't being made just isn't true. And they feel very good about the progress that's being made. The accomplishment. Go back to Afghanistan. 25 million people were liberated. They now have popularly elected president for the first time in the history of that country in 5,000 years. Women are voting. Women are participating. They are making economic progress. And Iraq is behind that at this pace. But what's happening is historic. And these people are being asked for the first time in their lives to allow a constitution to be the thing that protects them from each other.
First of all, if you look up last throes, it can mean a violent last throw.
Yeah, but you much. Know what the suggestion of and last throes is. It means we're coming
towards the
end.
Let me finish my sentences now, George. We can do this. Okay. The fact of the matter is that as you get closer to the Constitution drafting, completion, referendum, and then elections, the violence could very well go up. And think what they have to lose. Think of Zarqawi. There is no Ho Chi Minh or Mao there. There's a Jordanian terrorist who's killing Iraqi people. There's no national movement in that country. They don't have a vision. They're losers, and they're going to lose. Now, are a lot of people going to be killed between now and then? Iraqis? You bet. They're killing Iraqis, these terrorists are. A lot of Iraqis. And the Iraqi people don't like it. So they're opposing an elected government in Iraq, not some national movement that's taking place. There's not any difference between what the vice president and General Abizaid are saying.
No contradiction.
No contradiction at all. People can grab it and try to make one and suggest that there is one, as you have, but there isn't. Abizaid briefs the vice president. He briefs the president. They know, they're in full agreement as to what's taking place. And what's taking place is progress on the political side, progress on the economic side, and an insurgency that is staying level and may very well continue to or get more violent because they have so much to lose between now and December.
But that's not a sign of an increasing strength in the insurgency if they have 400 to 500 attacks a week, as General Casey said in the hearings?
I think General Casey said there are something like maybe a half of 1% of the Iraqi people are part of the insurgency. It doesn't take a genius to go blow up a restaurant or attack a police station, a suicide bomber. You can kill a kid with a suicide vest can kill a lot of people. Does that mean that the population is going south and there's no plan and and no progress? No, it doesn't mean that at all. There is solid progress. And in terms of a plan, the success in training the Iraqi security forces has been significant. And the respect for the Iraqi security forces by the Iraqi people. The polls show that they are very well respected because of what they're doing.
As you know,
it's killed 13,085 wounded and injured, cost of $208 billion. We've been there for 831 days and still have 135,000 American troops. Does any of that represent, in your mind, misjudgments made by you or the administration about Iraq?
Well, you know, you have to remember that in every war, a battle plan doesn't survive first contact with the enemy. This is in history. Why? Because 1,500 Iraqi security forces, not troops, security forces. That's what we always say. They're a mixture of police, border guards, special commando battalions, counterterrorist units, army units, mechanized and not mechanized. About level, actually, in terms of the number of incidents, the lethality is up. There is no question but that the enemy is a thinking enemy, that their attacks are more lethal than they had been previously. They're killing a lot more Iraqis. But if you think about the insurgency, they don't have any vision. There's no Ho Chi Minh. There's no Mao. There's no nationalistic. This is led by
Zarqawi.
He's a Jordanian. And he's doing it not against a dictatorial government. He's doing it against an elected Iraqi government.
Prepared speech?
He is the enemy of the Iraqi people. He is going out and beheading people. He's killing dozens of Iraqis and Iraqi security forces. You look at the polling data on the confidence that the Iraqi people have for the Iraqi security forces, and it's going up like this. And he's out attacking the institution that the Iraqi people have confidence in, and the Iraqi...
Now, do you think that a police unit in Washington, D.C. has to be capable of mobilizing and going to California? No. Should a Border Patrol unit be able to move all across the country with helicopters?
No,
of course
but if
not.
American troops are going to come home, Iraqi troops will have to replace them. He also says that from what he's hearing from the generals on the ground, it will take about 2 more years for the Iraqi forces to be capable of replacing the American forces that are there now. Do you disagree with that?
It's hard to know precisely how long it'll take. It is condition-based. Some of these people who want to set a timetable, a deadline, I think are making a terrible mistake. It just tells the enemy, wait us out. Now, is it going to take some time to train these people up? Sure. Are they increasing in their capabilities and their numbers? Yes. Are our numbers coming down? Yes. They were 160,000. Now they're 139,000. Will the coalition continue to make adjustments? Yes. And as the capabilities there and as the insurgency declines, the security capability that's needed depends on the intensity of the insurgency. Saddam Hussein regime killed hundreds of thousands of these people. He used chemicals on the Kurds. I mean, this is not a nice man who's in jail and going to be tried later on. On the other hand, the people who lost out, the Sunnis, didn't like it. And you're quite right. They did not greet our people as liberators, and they're still fighting today.
Was a robust insurgency on your list that you gave the president?
I don't remember whether that was on there, but certainly was discussed the possibility that you could have dead-enders who would fight. In fact, the Fedayeen Saddam did that during the course of the battle, getting up to Baghdad. They occupied a footprint, a more intrusive occupation force that would further alienate Iraqi people from the coalition forces and what they're trying to do. Second, the implication of the question was that we don't have enough to win against the insurgency. We're not going to win against the insurgency. The Iraqi people are going to win against the insurgency. That insurgency could go on for any number of years. Insurgencies tend to go on 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 years.
the coalition forces, foreign forces, are not going to repress that insurgency. We're going to create an environment that the Iraqi people and the Iraqi security forces can win against that insurgency. So I regret that he feels that way. I am absolutely convinced that the general officers in charge of this, who've made those decisions, are correct. If they came to us and said they needed more people, as they have, we've increased them. For the last election, when the violence went up, we increased them to 160,000. They're now down to 139,000. Why? Because the generals sent people home and said they would prefer to have fewer people, so that the stress on the Guard and Reserve is less. We're rebalancing skill sets within the active force and within the Guard and Reserve so that we don't put as much strain on certain skills.
Excuse me. Finally, sir, there's a report in the London Sunday Times today that says Pentagon officials, U.S. officials, had direct talks on June 3rd and 13th with the insurgents north of Baghdad. Is that true?
June? How would I know? Direct talks on June, some date, you say?
And well, it said one of the Americans at the talks introduced himself as a Pentagon representative and declared himself ready to find ways of stopping the bloodshed on both sides and to listen to the demands and grievances. Did you get a report on that meeting?
I get reports on dozens of meetings. If you're asking, are the Iraqis, whose country it is, reaching out to the Sunnis? Yes, they are. They have the interests of the violent extremists. And will that hurt the insurgency? I believe it will. I think progress and security progress. I mean, there's no question but the Iraqi security forces are getting better and better and have the confidence of the Iraqi people. There's no doubt in my mind but that Senator Graham has a point, that some people are concerned and they see the negative. They see the negative data.
Ladies and gentlemen, Queens of the Stone Age.
Many, many years ago, when I was a theater director back in New York City, I did a show down at Inroads which probably isn't there anymore, down in Soho. An adaptation of Richard Foreman's play Walled Garden, which he'd never staged. Did it under the auspices of the Creation Company. I've seen recently on the Creation website some notes about that production. Anyway, one night, Glenn Branca and Brian Eno came to see the show, and I got to speak with them afterwards, particularly Glenn, but Brian was there, and he was appreciative of being there. I don't know if he thought the production was very good. I was trying to do anti-Foreman things. In one sequence, I had the actor whose character name was Ben. My name's Bennett. And I had the actor playing Ben writing, and the cast came up, picked him up, and started eating him. Richard told me that it made the hair stand up on the back of his neck. But Brian came to that. He came to some other things that I did back in my theatrical days. I have this interview from just recently in Arthur magazine. And Brian says some really interesting things, so I'm going to just read portions of the interview to you to give you some perspective from somebody who's pretty intelligent, sees things fairly clearly. And basically, it's summertime. There isn't a lot of news. There isn't a lot of pressing concerns, just a war and a bad economy. So why don't we listen to what an artist has to say? What seemed desperately important to you, Brian Eno, as a young man, that no longer seems quite so pressing? Brian says, I've somewhat lost faith in art and the cultural world, because I think it has no faith in itself. Culture is the most important thing we do, but it seems to me that we don't take it seriously. And he goes on to say, the visual arts in particular are in very dire straits at the moment. What makes you feel starstruck? He's asked. No stars do. It's funny, but I've never been impressed by those kind of celebrities. The closest I've come to being starstruck is by the biologist Richard Dawkins. I'm so impressed by his work, by the work that he's done, that when I met him, I found myself wondering what could I say that would possibly be of interest to him. What do you long for? Discipline and some kind of routine. There always seem to be so many things going on in my life, and I'm never quite prepared for any of them. Take a simple thing like collecting cuttings out of a newspaper. You'd think that would be a pretty easy thing to organize. I'm always cutting things out, and there are little stacks of clippings all around my studio, but there's never any time to create a filing system and actually file them. In my imagined life of discipline and routine, there would be 20 minutes each morning to file clippings, then half an hour for a swim, which is something I actually do manage to do most days. I just wish there was more of that structure. What's your idea of an important achievement? Years ago, my assistant bought a chair for £1,000 at a fishing lake owned by 300 fishermen, and nearly every weekend he goes there and basically meditates with a fishing rod in his hand. That's what people are really doing when they fish. This strikes me as a great thing to achieve, probably because it speaks to my hankering for simplicity and routine. I also admire people who say fuck this to the lot they've been dealt in life and demand something more for themselves. I have a nephew who has Lowe's syndrome, and he's got very poor eyesight and several other little things wrong with him. But this kid is so full of life, partly because my sister, his mother, told him don't accept your lot. She could have taken the attitude, oh, he's disabled, he can't do much, but she sort of threw him into life. So to make maximum use of what you've got is an important achievement. Take Lou Reed as a guitar player. The early records by the Velvet Underground have some of the most inspiring guitar playing I've ever heard. But I don't think anyone would say Lou Reed is a great guitar player. He just knows how to use the gift he has to maximum effect. The first time I interviewed you, the Arthur interviewer states, was 25 years ago. And thinking back to that time, it seems the world was a much safer and slower place. Is it simply a trick of the mind that we tend to recall the past as somehow simpler? Or is the world actually picking up ever greater speed and complexity? I don't think it's a trick of the mind. A few years ago, the United Nations published a graph that charted various indicators of human well-being, like security, equality, freedom, employment, access to clean water, all sorts of things. It was interesting to me that there is objective evidence for the incremental changes people feel. And the rather alarming conclusion they drew was that Western civilization peaked in 1976. I think it's true that up until the early 80s, people felt they were on an upward curve, at least in our culture. This isn't true for every culture. But here in the West, I think people believed things were getting better and globalization was a good idea. Today, most people seem to feel that the threats outnumber the promises and the dangers outnumber the freedoms. So what are the long-term implications of this UN graph? That man's on the road to extinguishing himself? Oh, I think there's a very good chance of that, actually. And having young children, I find it absolutely alarming to contemplate what kind of world they'll be living in when they're my age. There have been various points in human history when people felt the end really was near. But the difference now is that we're more powerful than we've ever been. Any one of us, as individuals, is almost as powerful as whole nations were in the past, in terms of what we can handle, damage, and effect. Of course, we can do good things too, but those things are less easy to achieve single-handedly. Good projects require cooperation, but you can create quite a lot of damage all by yourself. An unfortunate shift in America's political landscape is the fact that the will of the people no longer seems to mean much, says the interviewer. Our government does what it damn well pleases, regardless of public response to their decisions. Brian says, I think that's true. In the 60s, people perhaps naively thought that democracy meant what it's supposed to mean. But today, with Fox News and professional liars in politics, we've come to realize that democracy doesn't really mean anything. As was evidenced in the recent UK elections, things aren't quite so dire yet in England. Yes, Tony Blair was re-elected, boo, but he won with a much reduced majority and a strong message from the people, which was this: don't fuck about with us. It became increasingly obvious to the British people that Blair had deceived them, and that the story of why we were going to war was untrue, and his re-election was essentially a vote of confidence for the Labour Party, which has been a quite successful government in many ways, except for its alignment with Bush. England is basically a centre-left country, and I don't think any members of the Labour Party approve of Bushism as a style. Bush is a very charismatic man, though, and I think Blair is a bit of a groupie. Obviously, Bush is an ignorant bully, but he's a confident man, and lots of people really go for that. Do you believe in destiny? No, but I believe that if you believe in destiny, it will make a difference in what happens to you. Some people think, I am chosen, and I'm a favored person, and that gives them a confidence that has the effect of making them chosen. The reverse happens as well. Some people consider themselves cursed and believe nothing will ever go right for them. And, of course, nothing does. What role does faith play in your life? Last year, I went to see Archbishop Desmond Tutu speak, and I was struck by the fact that on several occasions he made the observation, "You have no idea what goodness there is in people." This really impressed me, given that this was a guy who'd really seen some of the worst that people are capable of. He was talking about the Truth and Reconciliation Council And the great surprise of that endeavor was the incredible generosity of feeling people had and their ability to forgive really awful things. So, I agree with Desmond Tutu's comment for the simple reason that I have faith in human intelligence. So do I. That's pretty interesting, right? Gives you something to think about, doesn't it? Bennett, just sharing it with you for the Thursday news here on Kill Radio.
But condemning the alleged religious intolerance of the Air Force Academy isn't the hyperbole part. That came from Indiana Republican John Hostetler.
Mr. Chairman, the long war on Christianity in America continues today on the floor of the United States House of Representatives.
Yes, the long war on Christianity. I pray that one day we may live in an America where Christians can worship freely. In broad daylight, openly wearing the symbols of their religion, perhaps around their necks. And maybe, dare I dream it, maybe one day there could even be an openly Christian president. Or perhaps 43 of them consecutively.
With all the bull thuggery of the religious crap that the right wing has been throwing at the country, let's go back to simpler times. Back in 1960, the first Catholic who ran for president and succeeded gave a speech September 12th, 1960. This was before his election. John F. Kennedy, before the Houston Ministerial Association on September 12th, 1960. I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no Catholic prelate would tell the president, should he be Catholic, how to act, and no Protestant minister would tell his parishioners for whom to vote, where no church or church school is granted any public funds or political preference. I believe in an America that is officially neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish, where no public official either requests or accepts instructions on public policy from the Pope, the National Council of Churches, or any other ecclesiastical source, where no religious body seeks to impose its will directly or indirectly upon the general populace or the public acts of its officials. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a president who could actually say things like that today?
I wrote it on the road. It's kind of irreverent, but you're not very religious in this part of the country anyway, so I doubt if it will offend anybody. Anyways, this is the blues by the Jews. Here it is. Sunday, I speak in the name of God. They call me Billy Sunday. I speak in the name of God. God is always angry, just in case you think he's not. He's angry at your body for reasons that are his. He doesn't like your body, according to reason, that are only healed. I'd like you to know he's very, very angry, but that's just the way he is. He's angry at the spirit that has turned away from him. That has turned away from him. If he ever gets his hands on it, he's gonna tear it limb from limb. Sunday, I speak in the name of God. They call me Billy Sunday. Just in case you think he's not. Say for a fact he is not pleased with his universe. It drives him up the wall. He's sorry that he ever thought of you and me at all. When you're dying, and he's angry when you're dead, and you're always one or the other. He's angry when you're dying. He's angry when you're dead. Furious at me for everything I've ever said. If you feel his anger some night, let's say in a motel room at 3 a.m. Thank you. If you feel his awesome anger in your hotel room, let's say it's 3 a.m. It turns out that he's still very angry that you took so long to be afraid of him. They call me Billy Sunday. I speak in the name of God. They call me Billy Sunday. I speak in the name of God. I've come here to tell you that God is always angry, just in case you think he's not.
America, I've given you all, and now I'm nothing. America, $2.27, January 17th, 1956. I can't stand my own mind. America, when will we end the human war? Go fuck yourself with your atom bomb. I don't feel good. Don't bother me. I won't write my poem till I'm in my right mind. America, when will you be angelic? When will you take off your clothes? When will you look at yourself through the grave? When will you be worthy of your million Trotskyites? America, why are your libraries full of tears? America, when will you send your eggs to India? I'm sick of your insane demands. When can I go into the supermarket and buy what I need with my good looks? America, after all, it is you and I who are perfect, not the next world. Your machinery is too much for me. You made me want to be a saint. There must be some other way to settle this argument. Burroughs is in Tangiers. I don't think he'll come back. It's sinister. Are you being sinister, or is this some form of practical joke? I'm trying to come to the point. I refuse to give up my obsession. America, stop pushing. I know what I'm doing. America, the plum blossoms are falling. I haven't read the newspapers for months. Every day somebody goes on trial for murder. America, I feel sentimental about the Wobblies. America, I used to be a communist when I was a kid. I'm not sorry. I smoke marijuana every chance I get. I sit in my house for days on end and stare at the roses in the closet. Whenever I go to Chinatown, I get drunk and never get laid. My mind is made up. There's going to be trouble. You should have seen me reading Marx. I have mystical visions and cosmic vibrations. America, I still haven't told you what you did to Uncle Max after he came over from Russia. I'm addressing you. Are you going to let your emotional life be run by Time magazine? I'm obsessed by Time magazine. I read it every week. Its cover stares at me every time I slink past the corner candy store. I read it in the basement of the Berkeley Public Library. It's always telling me about responsibility. Businessmen are serious. Movie producers are serious. Everybody's serious but me. It occurs to me that I am America. I'm talking to myself again. Asia is rising against me. I haven't got a Chinaman's chance. I better consider my national resources. My national resources consist of two joints of marijuana, millions of genitals, an unpublishable private literature that goes 1,400 MPH, and 25,000 mental institutions. I say nothing about my prisons, nor the millions of underprivileged who live in my flower pots under the light of 500 suns. I have already abolished the whorehouses of France. Tangiers are the next to go. My ambition is to be president, despite the fact that I'm a Catholic. America, how can I write a holy litany in your silly mood? I will continue, like Henry Ford. My strophes are as individual as his automobiles. More so, they're all different sexes. America, I will sell you strophes, 2,500 apiece, 500 down on your old strophe. America, free Tom Mooney. America, save the Spanish loyalists. America, Sacco and Vanzetti must not die. I am the Scottsboro Boys. America, when I was 7, Mama took me to communist cell meetings. They sold us garbanzos, a handful per ticket. A ticket cost a nickel, and the speeches were free. Everybody was angelic and sentimental about the workers. It was all so sincere, you have no idea what a good thing the party was. In 1835, Scott Nearing was a grand old man, a real mensch. Mother Bloor made me cry. I once saw Israel Amter playing. Everybody must have been a spy. America, you don't really want to go to war. America, it's them bad Russians. Them Russians, and them Chinamen, and them Russians. The Russia wants to eat us alive. The Russia's power mad. She wants to take our cars from out our garages. Her wants to grab Chicago. Her needs Red Readers as digests. Her wants our auto plants in Siberia. Him big bureaucracy running our filling stations. That no good. Ugh, him make Indians learn read. Him need big black niggers. Ah. Her make us all work 16 hours a day. Help. America, this is quite serious. America, this is the impression I get from looking in the television set. America, is this correct? I'd better get right down to the job. It's true, I don't want to join the army or turn lathes and precision parts factories. I'm nearsighted and psychopathic anyway. America, I'm putting my queer shoulder to the wheel.
There you go. June 30th, 2005. An insurgency is getting stronger in Iraq, and our leadership is denying it. Though they're admitting it will go on for a long time. And meanwhile, religion's in trouble. That was Leonard Cohen doing Billy Sunday, a very rare live track. And the Queens of the Stone Age did In My Head, their latest single, live. And the reason it's impressionistic is because it's left to you. You, beautiful listener. You're the one who has to put it all together, make it work. How can you do that? What are you going to do about it? Well, you can come back Saturday night at midnight and listen to The Chill Room. Or you can go to radioforall.net and download my shows. Or you can listen on Upstart Radio. But especially you can listen to Kill Radio. Thanks for listening to Kill Radio. Don't forget to kill your friends.
Without meaning, without purpose. You have taken everything from us.